In author Greg Hammond's book, Mystic Seduction, Awakening Christians to a Real and Present Danger, readers learned about the steady intrusion of a mystical, non-Christian theology and doctrine known as monism. Greg's latest book is entitled, A Global Utopia, 12 Features of the New World Order. In this work, Greg discusses the push for a global utopia which encompasses the perfect society, world peace, effective government, and a just economic system. Are any of these things achievable, though? Most of the current world leaders think so. Unfortunately, what they are willing to foist upon mankind would mean the end of Christianity and the freedoms and liberties Americans have enjoyed since the inception of our nation. Stay tuned for my interview with Greg Hammond next on the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, Dolores said, to talk of other things. Of shoes and chips and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Hi, friends. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you would, leave us a review and a rating. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, at Soaring Eagle Rad. And, of course, you can visit us on our website and listen to every episode there, SoaringEagleRadio.com. My guest in this episode is Greg Hammond. He holds a bachelor's degree in history and a master's degree in social sciences. Along with his wife, Shannon, he currently works as a college campus minister. In addition to his campus responsibility, he is an ordained minister and currently pastors a non-denominational independent church. He is the author of Mystic Seduction, Awakening Christians to a Real and Present Danger, and his latest book, A Global Utopia, 12 Features of the New World Order. Greg, welcome back to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Well, thanks, Mike, for having me back, and it's a pleasure to be here, and I'm really looking forward to this.
Well, I always enjoy chatting with you, Greg. Last time we talked on the show, you were planning to issue a follow-up to Mystic Seduction. Really, I think, if I recall correctly, an elaboration or a continuation of that work. And I'm wondering for our listeners if you still plan on doing that.
Well, yeah, I am. And what I'm kind of thinking about doing now, the material that I originally was going to use for a second book, I'm going to probably break it up into three smaller books. I think, you know, the content I'm finding that maybe it'd be better for someone to have a little bit smaller book to wade through and process through. But the book that we're going to be talking about tonight, really, I is a book I never really intended to write. But after writing the first book, I began to realize that a lot of Christians just don't grasp the reality of what's, you know, coming down the pipeline, so to speak.
Yes.
And so I felt like, okay, I need to look at this coming new world order to make that a reality to people so they can frame what's Christianity's going to be pressed with in the future, and so they'll realize, hey, we need to be setting up and taking notice about what's going on here.
Yes, I think that's a good plan, Greg. That, and of course, as you mentioned, that's the subject of our conversation tonight, a global utopia, 12 features of the New World Order. Now, central to this dream of a utopia that spans the entire world is the necessity of peace. The primary question that people should be asking, though, is this: at what cost shall we have peace? Why should people be very concerned about any idea of peace being pushed by globalists, Greg?
Yeah, well, you know, the first thing is you know, peace is a good thing, and we know that Jesus, you know, ultimately when he comes and establishes his kingdom, there's going to be a peaceful situation, but obviously the question really is on what terms do we have peace, and I think that's where the issue really comes. I remember several years ago watching a video about World War II, and it was an old gentleman. I don't know what his rank was during the war, but he was an admiral at the time that he made the quote. But he said, you know, the best way to have war is to advertise peace at all costs. Yeah. And I think, you know, basically that's what I'm talking about. I think, you know, that does the world want peace, and what are they willing to pay for it? And I'm afraid that they're going to be willing to pay a price that's much higher than what they think.
Yes, yes. And one of the things that you make very clear in your book, Greg, is that in order to do that, there's going to have to be some form of centralized power. Now, the history of mankind has demonstrated that power centralized in the hands of a few, a centralized government, if you will, has only and ever resulted in evil. The myth that is still being perpetrated today, that religion is responsible for more killing in human history than any other cause, is nonsense. Really, communism and tyrannical governments have killed millions of its own citizens, as well as millions around the world through world wars. Now, there's not one example, and I thought about this as prepping for the show, Greg, there's not one example in all of recorded history where absolute power has not corrupted. And our founding fathers were careful to avoid this problem of a centralized government when they constructed our governing documents. And yet it's amazing today that we see thousands, tens of thousands, perhaps even hundreds of thousands of people clamoring for political ideologues like Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, despite the fact that both of these people are unapologetic progressive Marxist socialists who have stated very clearly that they believe Americans have too many freedoms, and if elected, they're going to take some of those freedoms away from us. So in your book, I'm leading up to this point, in your book, you give a little history lesson of the Bolsheviks who conquered Russia, and they kind of spun the narrative to make it sound like their form of government would be much better for people. Now, American politicians, they're not even bothering to hide their true plans today. So the question is this: we are, as a nation, being led into a full-fledged embrace of this globalist agenda, and this current presidential cycle, in my view, is proof of that. What are your thoughts on that, Greg?
Well, yeah, I definitely think, you know, that well, you know, for starters, you know, I think that the best form of government would be a divine right monarch who is totally good and wants to help the people, you know, and that's Jesus Christ, of course.
Yes.
But, you know, and democracy is a way to try to avoid what you just described, you know, an authoritarian government, because people are evil and they're sinful and they want control of things. They want to control people. And of course, you know, like in the Bolshevik Revolution, they promised the people what they wanted, you know, and what they wanted to hear, which sounds very familiar in our political, you know, situation today. But in order to get control. But when I look at what's going on in our world today, you know, like here in the United States, I mean, I see a lot of things that are moving us towards giving up our freedoms and moving us towards a global society. I mean, when you look at the de-emphasis of the military, the ability for the United States, for example, to defend itself and its national sovereignty, the idea of our nation and our national laws taking a backseat to international law and the United Nations, this, you know, push for a world economy, you know, in education, the promotion of the global village, and the media promotes that as well. And just the general decline in moral values, I mean, which our country has historically had the values of Christianity, and we're dropping those for the values of the world, which is basically the sin of man, you know, dictating right. what's right and what's wrong.
Yes, yeah. One of the many things I like about your book, Greg, is that you give readers an outline of what they will encounter. And in chapter 2, you list 12 things that are essential for a global utopia. And then you follow through in describing how each of those are manifested today in our world. And what I would like to do at this point is just to give those 12 things quickly for our listeners, so they have some idea and sure. they connect the dots with our conversation as we proceed. And those 12 points are from pages 17 and 18 of your book. 12 prerequisites, if you will, for the establishment of a global utopia. And here they are. Point number one, there must be a political entity with a common vision. In other words, a world government. There must be a unified global economy. Point three, there must be social unity on a global scale. Number four, there must be a worldwide unified education system. Point five, there must be a worldwide unified news media. Point six, the concept of global evolution must be promoted in all areas of life. Now that's an interesting one there, and we'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah.
Point seven, various world crises must be promoted that can be solved only through global cooperation. Point eight, there must be a global military police force to enforce the laws and decisions made by the global government. Point nine, apathy and self-centeredness will be prevalent, especially in Western culture. Point 10, the demise of the West and the rise of the East. Point 11, the advent of cultural Marxism. And point 12, there must be spiritual unity on a global scale. So let's discuss some of those key elements that, mm-hmm. that must be present for a global utopia to become a reality. The first thing that must happen is that there must be a global government. Now, you don't mean that individual nations will no longer have governments, but that all governments, in a sense, will lose their sovereignty to a single global authority. And so what signs are we seeing of that happening today, Greg?
Well, I think, you know, one of the key things is I think nations are going to lose their sovereignty to a global entity, which I think is going to be the United Nations, because it's the perfect, you know, yeah. organization and set up to do just that. But like, you know, one of the big things you can really point to, and I talk about in the book, is that we see in this is the UN Agenda 21 on sustainability.
Yes.
And basically what sustainability basically is, it's, you know, the ability of mankind to meet the needs, you know, of the current generation economically and feeding them and all the things they need, without compromising the future. And it's a big buzz, you know, on the college campus and everything, the idea of sustainability. But what it basically means is that the UN is going to inventory and control all aspects of economic life on the planet.
Exactly.
In other words, they're going to control all the natural resources so that to basically, you know, a person, the things that man needs to work and to survive, he's going to have to rely upon this global government. And so he's going to have to play the global government's game if he wants, you know, to survive. And so the idea of private property, if you do have private property, you're going to be told what you can and can't do with it. But, you know, I think ultimately they're going to seize private property.
Yes. Yeah. And I want to make sure, Greg, that our listeners understand clearly what you just said. The sustainability movement that really originated in the UN with the Agenda 21 program sounds very nice. And they've packaged it. They've got the narrative down pat, and they've sold it to the younger generation. College campus, like you said, is abuzz with this whole sustainability idea. And on the surface, it sounds wonderful. Hey, we should be good stewards of our environment. We should be good stewards of our resources so that our children and our children's children can have the same kind of life that we had. Now, what they're missing in that, though, is what you said. The United Nations is going to dictate to the world's population how much resources they can have or use, and I can tell you that it's going to be drastically cut, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah. The global utopians also, it's a phrase that's gained some traction in the political arena. Never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah.
and they certainly don't, do they? They're not above using scare tactics, to get laws passed. And I'm thinking here of things like climate change.
Well, yeah, I think so. I think, you know, they're going to use, well, any kind of real or manufactured crises they're going to use to scare people because, you know, fear motivates people.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, that, you know, they're going to use anything that they can come up with to try to get people to give their freedoms up in order for security. And so I think, you know, it's fear is the great motivator. You know, people want the necessities of life. I look back like in the Middle Ages, you know, when the serfs gave all their possessions and everything over to the lords in return for security. You know, they were willing to do that, but it was a heavy price that they paid. And I think, you know, that's what we're looking at today is the situation where people are going to be so alarmed at these so-called, whether it be global warming or whatever you want to talk about, that they're going to be willing to do whatever the experts say needs to be done and give them the power to do that.
Yeah, there are a good many people that are swallowing that lie of climate change, hook, line, and sinker. But there are, I think there's a majority of people who are not. They see through it and mm-hmm. see that it really is a scam. It's just another method of wealth redistribution or transfer. And I see evidence for that. And I know that that's the case because our own government here in the United States, our Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, has come out and said, in a very threatening way, that climate change deniers, those who resist the notion of climate change, should be arrested and prosecuted. Now, how
right.
crazy is that?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I think we're facing that on a individual basis. You know, it's what I call the thought police are going to try to get
yes.
you, you know, and whatever you say, you know, if you disagree with anybody, you know, I mean, they're going to come down on you. And I think the same thing's going to happen on a national scale too. I think the UN's going to basically, you know, require certain countries to comply to whatever, they're dictating in relation to climate change or whatever they want to complain about or talk about. But if you don't comply, you know, they're going to come down on you. I know I quoted in my book or mentioned in my book, you know, the sustainable development of the New World Order, that was, I think this has probably been like 20 years ago. It's in Winnipeg, I think it was in Canada, but where they basically, you know, stated, you know, that any nation that refuses to comply to the international law on something like climate change, that, if they refuse to comply, that basically they would be physically occupy the offending nation and set up a trusteeship. And what they're talking about there is military invasion and yes. taking over a country.
That's
and
right.
so I think, you know, whether it's a personal level, whether it's a national level, I think there's going to be a huge price to be paid if you buck the system.
Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And one of the many things that I've learned over the years, Craig, is that the globalists, they don't mind telegraphing what it is that they're trying to achieve. And we'll talk about maybe carbon credits and this whole scam of selling carbon credits to business to offset their pollution maybe later in the show. But for now, one of the things that I'd like to have you explain for our listeners as a way of demonstrating that globalists don't mind telegraphing what it is that they're trying to achieve is something that is in plain sight every day all over the world, and that is the UN flag. Can you describe the symbolism that's present there in the UN flag, Greg?
Well, yeah, I'm an artist. I notice things that maybe other people don't notice. And I remember growing up as a kid, you know, the UN flag was hanging in all the gyms, you know, and everything. I mean, they were promoting it even back then, but when you look at the UN flag, you know, it's a light blue flag that has imposed upon it the globe, the world, and it's as if you're looking down on the northern hemisphere from the, you know, down from the North Pole. And then, of course, it has, you know, two laurel branches surrounding it. And what I see in the symbolism, whether it's accidental or whether it was intentional, I don't know. I think the evil one was guiding it, no matter how break it down. But, you know, the circle, first of all, the globe represents is, you know, you talk about the monism, you know, the paganism. It's, it's a symbol that everything that is God. It's the belief that all of creation and man and everything is God. There's no separation between creation and the creator. You know, when we know Christianity, theism promotes the idea that God has existed forever and he spoke creation into being, and we owe everything to him and our very existence. Right. But anyway, so I see that symbolism first of all, this idea that all of creation is God. But then when you look at the way they put the latitude and longitudinal lines on it, any direction you look at that globe, what actually is there is the cross of Nero. Yes. And what the cross of Nero was, and we all know that Nero was a crazy Caesar who was persecuting and executing Christians, you know, there in the first century of the church. But it was a symbol he used. It was an upside down broken cross within a circle. And that broken cross turned upside down was mocking, obviously, the death of Jesus Christ. And the symbolism in it was that from his standpoint, the perfect world, the utopia would be a world without Christians and without Christianity. Yes. And, of course, within that system, the emperor was worshipped as Lord and God, which is the same thing as the Antichrist will be worshipped. Yes. And so I see that, first of all, but beyond that, the laurel branches that go around it, you know, are olive branches. And most people, they associate olive branches with peace. But this is not a symbol of peace. What it is, it's the laurel. It forms the laurel crown that the Roman emperors war, and those laurel crowns were not a symbol of peace, but a symbol of divine authority of Caesar. Yes. And so that during the Roman times, any peace that the people had was associated with the power and the authority of Rome and Caesar's ability to enforce it. So, and what's really crazy about that, you know, in the 1960s here in America and in the cultural upheaval, you know, the deconstruction of the 60s, the peace sign is the cross of Nero. And and obviously it's promoting anything but peace, or it's a peace based upon, you know, evil and not upon good. And within that revolution of the 1960s, it had a spiritual basis, and that spiritual basis and morality was that it was based in man. The leaders of that time period, you know, declared, you know, the age of Pisces, the fish, the Christian era is over, and we're entering into a new age, the age of Aquarius, the new spirituality.
That's right.
So,
well, it's easy to see, I think, in the current setup of the United Nations and how it is really applied or asserted itself into all kinds of agenda-driven subjects all around the globe. It's easy to see how globalists could use the UN as the framework organization and really set it up for the one that Christians call the lawless one. The Antichrist could maybe even use the UN, couldn't he?
Yeah, well, I think it definitely is, because, you know, all the structures and everything are in place, the authorities there. And of course, you know, the Bible describes the Antichrist as the lawless one, but when I think about him, I think, you know, he's going to come with plenty of law. It's just, but those laws are going to be opposed to the morality, the moral laws of God Almighty. And I think that's what makes him lawless. But I think, you know, he's going to use these international laws, declaring these as universal laws, and they will supersede any national law of any country. And you know, I just, you know, you look at our Supreme Court even right now in cases they're appealing to international law to make decisions within our own country, you know. So even now the Supreme Court, you know, is using international law as superseding our federal laws with that. So it's
Yeah, nobody in Congress is standing up to put a stop to that either, which is, it was just very telling to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, very telling.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other things that that you mentioned is the need for a global economy, and now that's an easy one for people to wrap their minds around, I think, at least on the surface. Now, I don't think most people understand the implications of that, but most people understand today that we do live in a global economy,
right?
And that's had some positive benefits, but I think it's had many more negative benefits as well. Now, globalists, they have a mindset of centralizing everything, having everything under a controlled central authority, and the economy is certainly no exception to that. And they believe that would stabilize a global economy, and it would ensure that everyone across the world benefits, but really, that's simply not true. And history has demonstrated that repeatedly, I think. Now, much of the discussion that's taking place about how to best resolve economic issues globally is the UN is trying to move the world from a free market, money-based economy to more of a controlled economy based on energy. And that's all part of the Agenda 21 strategy too, and so I was thinking, is that really what's behind the attempt to create carbon credits and to move people off of a paper monetary economic system, Greg?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think, you know, anything that they're doing is trying to move towards a one world government. I think they're trying to figure out all different ways that they can, you know, seize control. But I think, yeah, this is one of the ways that I think they could do that. You know, you break down national currencies or get rid of them.
Yeah.
And you're basically going on to a worldwide monetary system. It just doesn't have to be physical, you know, paper and coins, you know, like we use today. But I think, you know, that's what they're driving at. And like you said, you know, world economy, you know, is not bad, you know, but it's, and all these things, a lot of these things you could say, well, they're not really bad, but it's how they're being used to bring about evil that is the problem. But like, you know, you mentioned, you know, earlier, you know, and just now with the carbon credits, you know, I think that, it's all about control. I remember, I think a few years back, Al Gore was one of the biggest promoters of these carbon credits, which he is also one of the biggest abusers too, from an environmental standpoint.
Yes.
I recall reading at the time, I think it's in World Magazine or something, that he had like this 40,000 foot house that he was heating, you know, and cooling. And I'm thinking like, okay, you know, that's not very environmentally friendly, even if you are using, you know, your carbon credits to do that. But it's communistic thinking, basically. It's not about, you know, helping people. It's about controlling people.
That's right.
And that's the bottom line.
Yes. Yeah. And just in case folks think that, well, you're talking all of these things that really don't have an impact on me. Well, they absolutely do and will. And one other strategy that globalists are using currently is that they are changing societies. They are changing cultures. They're doing that very deliberately, and one strategy that they've employed successfully right under the noses of Americans is the idea of diversity and multiculturalism. Now, on the surface, again, they've been packaged in such a way that people have accepted them without much examination. But those ideas, at their core, they're very dangerous, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, And the problem with it is like, you know, if you say anything in any way, shape or form that's, you know, in disagreement with either of those two concepts, you know, you're going to be in trouble probably.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, and once again, like I say, you know, I think, you know, God loves diversity and I mean, he created us all different. He created the world, the plants and everything different. He created different cultures because I think, you know, otherwise we're all like, we'd be boring. It'd be a boring place. But the bottom line is, is that the danger, once again, is how they're being defined.
Yes.
And I think, you know, they're basically, in general, they're, each of those two things are being defined in a way that are opposed to God's created order and his morality, you know, and so you wind up in something like diversity, you have thrown into some things maybe that are okay, things like the homosexuality issue or the promotion of paganism or whatever you want to talk about. And so I think the goal is really to promote a spiritual and moral system that is anti-God, that is against, you know, anything, you know, that, that it comes from the Judeo-Christian heritage. I think they're wanting to promote anything that's opposed to that.
Yes. Yeah. And that really was, I believe, that was the end game all along, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with diversity, but let's be clear about something. Diversity, when it was first introduced, was about gender and race. It was about workplace diversity, equal opportunities for men and women, and equal opportunities for people of all ethnicities. That's what it was about. Now, what it's been stretched into, or really what it's morphed into, and again, I think this, my opinion is that this was intentional, is that it's now it's left gender and race, things that, that you can't change, that, that you're born a man or a woman, and you're born white, black, yellow, brown, whatever. But now it is, it includes behavior. And, and once you open that door, there is no stopping it. And we're seeing that today.
Exactly.
All over the nation. Multiculturalism, is really, it's the same strategy. It was introduced and packaged and a narrative attached to it that seemed reasonable and compassionate. But the idea, as you've stated just a moment ago, and that you developed very well in your book, the idea of multiculturalism is to raise every culture to equal footing and in the process devalue or destroy or deconstruct, whatever word folks would like to use, Western culture. And they've become very adept at doing that. And the result is anybody that speaks out against these things and sounds the alarm and says, wait a minute, this is not what diversity is intended to be, and this is not what multiculturalism, and I'm going to be very politically incorrect, Greg, but for folks to argue that multiculturalism is important and that Muslim culture that denigrates women, that practices female castration and other kinds of behaviors like that, to say that that culture is on equal footing and standing with Judeo-Christian cultures in the West is just absurd, and it's offensive to me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think what, you know, with the whole multicultural thing, what they're trying to do is they're trying to destroy or to de-emphasize Western culture. And the reason why is because Western culture is associated with the Judeo-Christian heritage. You
That's
know,
right.
that Christianity has been the Western culture has been the bastion of it, whether you want to talk about sending missionaries around the world or whatever you want to talk about.
Yes.
And so, obviously what you just alluded to, Christianity is opposed to those things because it's those things that you just mentioned are immoral, and God stands for what is right and good and pure.
That's
and
right.
So the idea is that the evil one hates what is right and good and pure.
That's
so to bring down Western culture is really its main goal is to bring down Christianity.
Yes, that's exactly right. Now, unfortunately, Greg, Americans have been asleep and for at least a generation or two, because the globalists have snuck in this agenda. Everything that we've talked about, it has a doorway that they've utilized to get these ideas into the minds of very young children, and they grow up thinking that this is the way that it should be. And that, what I'm talking about, of course, is our public education system.
Right.
A global re-education effort, in fact, has been going on for at least 75 years. That may shock some of our listeners, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if you would walk us through that, explain, you know, what's happened in education. And of course, you're going to probably mention some names like Blavatsky, Bailey, Columbia University, John Dewey, those kinds of folks.
Right.
And then when you do, I've got a quote from your book I want to share with our listeners. So could you walk us through what's happened to public education?
Well, sure. Well, the first thing what you just said, you know, is totalitarian governments historically have recognized how important it is to indoctrinate children. I mean, the younger they are, the easier it is to indoctrinate them. And the idea is that if you do that, then you have obedient citizens when they become adults that will do whatever they're told.
Yep.
And I think, you know, with our education system, you know, probably goes back into, you know, even pre-1940, you know, with Dewey and you know, I mean, he was like, I think he signed the Global or the Humanist Manifesto. You know, he was a humanist. And so, you know, his idea was that let's eradicate anything about Christianity out of the educational system, because man is basically the highest intelligence there is. So we're not going to acknowledge anything higher. And of course, you know, historically America, you know, Christianity has been at the core of the educational system. And a lot of people would disagree with that, but the facts are there.
That's right. Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, so we've been moving, you know, ever towards, you know, this globalist agenda of indoctrinating our kids into the coming global system. But, I think it really picked up, you know, with the coming of the UN, you know, in 1946 after World War II. Yeah. And like one of the key people that, has really had an impact was Robert Mueller, who I think he's Swiss and he was Assistant Secretary General of the UN under like at least three Secretary Generals there. But what people don't know about him, he was a student of the occult. His mentor was Alice Bailey, whose mentor was Helena Blavatsky. And Bailey for 30 years channeled a spirit known as the Tibetan.
Yes.
And this spirit gave her messages about the New World Order, basically. And what he told Bailey was that there was a group of world servers, a group of people whose goal was to unite the world and bring a world leader to power, which is the Antichrist. Okay.
Yep.
And he told Bailey that one of the key elements in order for this to happen would be through the control of the world's education system, and also it working hand in hand with the media to indoctrinate people. And the Tibetan also taught that this coming leader would be the Christ, and not Jesus Christ, but a person with the Christ consciousness of like the New Age movement. And he would teach that all religions were really one. And so, Mueller, you know, bought into this hook, line, and sinker, and he incorporated that, I think, in the 1950s in what he called the World Core Curriculum. And what the World Core Curriculum was designed to do was to be, implemented in every country around the world if possible in their educational systems. And it was to teach a global ethic, which the global ethic was what we're talking about here, all the things we've already talked about.
Yeah.
And of course, in the process, it would promote a new version of Christianity, which is what I was talking about in my book, Mystic Seduction.
Yes.
So anyway, but this is in one shape or another is can be found in about every educational system around the globe. And here in the United States, it's gone through several names in the past 20 or 25 years, but currently in the United States, it's known as Common Core.
Yes.
And basically, if you look at Common Core, what it attempts to do is it teaches the kids not only what to think, but more importantly, how to think.
Yes.
And when you look at how they're being taught to think, is that there are no right or wrong answers, only relative ones.
Yes.
And so when you start thinking about that in terms of morality, of right and wrong in whatever you're talking about, or especially with spiritual things, it becomes a nightmare. And our kids are, you know, being indoctrinated with this without really knowing it.
Yes, that's exactly right. Greg, and in your book on page 68 and 9, this education agenda that was really brought in by Mueller, you, as you mentioned, but it's taken off through a number of different programs that the UN promotes and that the United States and other governments have bought into. Currently, it's Common Core. Before that, I think it was America 2000 or something, or Goals 2000.
Right.
So there's been a number of name changes. And, you know, every time they change the name, they're just trying to hide something.
Right.
And so
it'll change again. Believe me.
You're right. But here's a quote from your book, Greg. You said, the education agenda has less to do with actually educating children and more to do with promoting globalist political goals and values through indoctrination at school. To further support this fact, consider the following facts in relation to the goal of Common Core textbooks, as related by Mary Jo Anderson in her article, Common Core Goes Global. And this is a quote from Anderson's article that you have in your book.
Right.
It says, a similar sentiment permeates other Common Core aligned texts. Concepts found in grade school children's textbooks, such as justice and equality, are given politically biased meanings. Justice is newly defined to mean the redistribution of wealth and resources. Equality is used to dismantle preference for one's own culture, religion, and social customs. Predictive information, data ostensibly gathered on each student to improve performance, is in truth a measurement of a student's adjusted attitude and behavior, a Soviet-style managed outcome. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
She said it, not me. I'm just quoting her. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, my heavens. I read that and I thought, we should be up in, now, all of my children are grown, but I have grandchildren, and you better believe I'm passing this information along to my children. So that they're aware of what's going on. And, of course, you know, being my children, they've been aware for a long time, as you can imagine. But
yeah.
But it's just craziness, the things that are passing right under our nose. Now, the media in America, they've already been exposed many, many, many years ago as being frauds. The media, and most of them just come right out and admit it now, they're not really about sharing news. They consider themselves entertainment. And what they do share has been sanitized and approved. We know for a fact that CNN is on the White House payroll. They only report what the White House gives them the green light to report. That's a well-known fact. But the media in America, they work hand in hand with the utopian globalists, don't they?
Yeah, and I think, I think their agenda is the same as the world core curriculum, and as like I just mentioned, the Tibetan told, Alice Bailey that education and the media were to work together. That was it. So they've been targeted too, and this is a spiritual thing. People need to understand there's a spiritual thing going on here.
Yes, that's right.
And people who don't acknowledge that, I guess, they don't see that, but there is. And I think, as you said, we have selective reporting, promoting the good as bad and bad as good, it's everything slanted. And the problem is with Americans is, to a degree, we can't help it because we're at the mercy of what they tell us. Because we can't go to the places or have access to the things that the reporters do to see for ourselves. But I do think we have the ability to know God's truth and to compare it to what we're hearing.
Yes.
and be able to come up with a pretty clear picture of what truth really is.
Yes.
But I think very clearly, and just some of the things you stated, there's an agenda going on here, and there are people at the top of a lot of these organizations, news organizations, whatever, that have their own political agenda. There's nobody that's totally devoid of having a position on anything. And I think, it's very clear. I think that they understand we need to have key people in key areas in order to keep our agenda moving ahead.
Yes.
So, and the media would be an obvious place that they would want to have people working for that.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a new age. You mentioned a spiritual element. There certainly is. And the New Age is playing a huge role in this. Roman Catholic mystic Teilhard de Chardin spoke about the evolution of the human mind and the need to create a global oneness of thinking, and he called that the Omega Point. And how does that, first of all, what is the Omega Point, and how does that assist in the building of a global utopia?
Yeah, well, you know, Deschardins believed, and there are a lot of New Agers, you know, this is a New Age teaching basically, but he believed that, first of all, you know, he believed that all the universe is God. I mean, he was a pagan monist, you know, so, people don't understand that, but he was. And what he believed was that there was a layer of consciousness that covers the whole earth, what he called the new sphere, and that this consciousness included everything, including man's consciousness. And so what he promoted was this idea of man evolving to a point where he became, and everything became pure spirit. I mean, that's kind of like, and what that is, that's Hinduism, basically, yes. You know, achieving nirvana.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And so, you know, what's being promoted in the world today is you know, these days of global meditation type of thing where everybody is called to meditate at the same time, you know, to try to achieve, if you will, an altered state of consciousness for the universe. Mm-hmm. And drive the world towards this ultimate goal. But in the process, what this does is it tries to get the world all together on one wavelength, you know, yes, working together, which is the aim of you know, the coming global society.
Yeah.
But also from a spiritual standpoint, even more importantly, it's getting the world spiritually to acknowledge that all that is God. And I think that's going to be the core of the one world religion that's coming and driving, you know, people away from God and towards self, basically.
Yes, yes. And they've begun, New Agers and globalists have begun to talk about something called the collective consciousness.
Right.
And something called quantum spirituality. What is that?
Yeah. Well, and it's really kind of a fantastic thing to think about that terminology because it's based in quantum physics.
Yes.
And what it to simplify, you know, because I don't know if I totally understand it or not, but to simplify, or anybody probably really doesn't because it's theory, but
Leonard Sweet does.
Yeah, he's more than happy to tell us, isn't he?
Yeah.
But basically, it's trying to integrate spirituality and science, you know, through consciousness alone, and to simplify, I guess it's trying to teach that quantum physics is a physical proof that the universe has a consciousness,
yeah,
you know,
right,
that merges the two into one, and so that when you look at like studying quantum physics, you know, well, you know, I mentioned like Amit Goswami, who is a physicist who also believes that the universe has consciousness, and he mm-hmm. believes that quantum physics, the idea of quantum non-locality, of, you know, how electrons communicate and everything, proves that there's a consciousness that the universe has apart from the consciousness that you as a person or I as a person have. Mm-hmm. And obviously what they're trying to prove through this is that all the universe and everything is one and it is God.
Yes. Wow.
So.
Well, it should be clear to our listeners by now that in order to achieve all these things, really force people around the world to comply, globalists will have to find a way to enforce compliance. Now, that's a very serious issue in America because our birthright as Americans and one that's enshrined in our founding documents is the right to keep and bear arms. And I think this is the primary reason that we see Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Barack Hussein Obama, and all progressive social Marxists, nearly all Democrats, scream for the curtailment of our Second Amendment rights. And it's also the reason that these same people never let a shooting incident go without speaking against gun rights, which it really frustrates me.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of talking about the things that should be talked about in those critical, tragic moments, It's always about grabbing the guns. So what is happening is that these globalists, really, in my opinion, Greg, they're conditioning people to accept their version of security over true freedom and liberty. But the utopian idea of security really ends up being slavery, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think so, because, you know, when you're giving up all your rights and freedoms and for personal security, I mean, you're giving up really everything, you know, and your right to own personal property, your right to defend yourself if someone's threatening you or your family, you're giving up really, ultimately, you're going to give up the right, what job you want to do or where you want to live.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able, and it's just like communism used to be. You're going to have a visa if you want to go anywhere,
yeah,
within your own country, even.
Yeah, that's right.
But you know, and like you say, with the gun control thing, you know, it's about, you know, them being able to tell us what we can and can't do, and obviously with the gun situation is to take away our ability to defend ourselves,
yes,
if the government gets out of line.
That's right.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say that that's what the Second Amendment is about. It's not about hunting.
Exactly.
It's about standing up against those that would try to take our rights away, i.e. a out-of-control government.
Right. Well, and I think I mentioned in the book, I don't remember what page it was, but, you know, when President Obama was responding to the shootings out in Oregon and was talking about how, you know, there are more shootings like that in the United States than any other place in the world. But then I gave the facts from, you know, a couple of different fact-finding organizations that,
yes,
what he was saying just was not true.
That's right. That's
and we
right.
were really kind of down the line compared to European countries and other places. So,
yes.
But that's an example of how, once again, the whole fear thing comes into play, you know, that there's something dangerous going on and we got to do something about it right now.
Yes, that's right. Well, I'm of the opinion, Greg, that America is in the midst of a well-designed process of forced moral synthesis, if you will. One purpose is to destroy the moral foundations of our past and replace that with the globalist ideals of morality. Needless to say, those are very much anti-God, as you've mentioned over and over again. One result of this forced mental or moral, certainly mental too, but moral synthesis, one result of that is that an apathy begins to really take hold of people, and eventually it turns into hostility toward God and his people. Yeah. And so I'm wondering, in your view, Greg, how far down that path are we today?
Yeah, well, you know, apathy and indifference, you know, first of all, you know, are a part of the fallenness of man. I mean, we all struggle with that, you know, and the bottom line is I think we have to make a choice to not be apathetic about things, to not be indifferent, you know, and I think with each successive generation, with the materialism and other things, you know, that our society offers, that I think each generation has become more and more apathetic and indifferent, you know, about issues that are going on. And of course, you know, I mean, when you look at things that are going on that are immoral, that are against God's standards, and you just look at it and say, well, yeah, that's too bad, but I've got other things to do,
yes,
you know, and I think it's getting worse, you know, I think, and part of it is just, you know, people just want to do whatever they want to do, you know, regardless of the morality of it and then the consequences,
yeah,
you know, and they don't want to be told what they can and can't do. You know, well,
yes,
if you keep down this road, you're going to be getting a lot of being told what you can and can't do.
Yes, yeah. And I, at the risk of offending people, I certainly don't ever do that intentionally. But one of the things that I've noticed today, Greg, is that so many Christians, they do not want to discuss or talk about or share anything that's a hot button issue that happens to be a very volatile kind of thing. They don't want to talk about that. And the excuse they use is that, well, we're just supposed to love people and
mm-hmm.
let's just be like Jesus. And what I believe is that those people really are just masking their apathy and throwing out the old excuse, well, we should just love people. Jesus stood up against a good many things and,
right.
And spoke very pointedly about sin and human behavior. So that kind of a statement doesn't get much mileage with me, but I am disappointed in the number of Christians that continue to trot that out there and then think that that excuses them from engaging the culture. So in place of Christianity then, the globalists are trying to create this new synthesis of religious thinking through collective consciousness, through quantum spirituality. But the vehicle that they're really using to do that is an Eastern mindset. And this idea that all religions are equal. And I think that's a primary reason behind the push for religious pluralism. What do you think about that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and, you know, really it's not so much that they want, I think that they want to push that religions are equal as much as they want to push that they're the same.
And
I think that's really is a distinction that really needs to be made because, you know, if you say they're equal, you know, you still acknowledge that there's differences and if there's differences, then you have to keep promoting tolerance and peaceful coexistence.
Yeah.
But there's still divisiveness there. I think they're pushing towards a sameness, you know, a spiritual syncretism. You know, we're all different on the outside, but the core we're all the same.
Yeah.
And what we're all in the inside of us is we're all God, so we should be worshiping ourselves. And so that's the Eastern mindset. You know, Hinduism, the New Age movement promotes that as well. And pushing religious pluralism does just that. I mean, it tries to level the playing field, saying that, you know, that there's no more truth in Christianity than any other religion. And I think that's the push behind, if they can't destroy Christianity, they want to modify it to a point that it becomes just like all the other religions, you know, acknowledging that we're all the same. And that was the whole point of my first book, Mystic Seduction, was to kind of point those things out.
Yeah. Well, how can Christians combat that?
Well, I think, you know, the key thing is really just educating themselves. I mean, I think, you know, they need to know God's word. They need to understand how to interpret it. And I mentioned in the book, I think there's three things that I mentioned, and these, I was actually quoting Ravi Zacharias. Now I couldn't be quoting anybody better than him on this.
Right.
But he said, you know, the first one he said, you know, we need to make distinctions between conviction and opinion, hold the former regardless of opposition.
Yes.
In other words, you know, we need to be convicted the truth is the truth, you know, that opinion is just opinion. And so we need to make sure that we don't have opinions, but we have conviction about what we believe.
Good point.
I also mentioned, you know, we need to align our beliefs with the Bible and not vice versa. And so many Christians they say, well, this is what I feel like is right. So I'm going to reinterpret the Bible or ignore the parts that disagree with what I want to believe.
Yeah.
And instead we need to align our thinking with the Bible. It's okay. This is what I believe, but the Bible says something different. So I need to have an attitude adjustment. I need to let the Lord reprogram me on that.
Amen. Yes.
But then the third one was to stop trying to build the kingdom of God on earth because that only aligns us with the globalists. And I think that's part of the problem. We want to have it just the way we want it here on this earth. And if you start living for the world, it's not going to last. Then you're living for the wrong thing.
Yeah. Well, that's the rotten fruit of the social gospel. Isn't
right.
You pay attention to trying to change the world and create this Edenic environment, and you forget that our mission is to teach people to make disciples of the Lord Jesus Christ, teach them to obey all of his commandments. It isn't to do all these other things that churches have gotten themselves wrapped up in, thinking that they're fulfilling the Great Commission. The Great Commission is very specific and says exactly what our mission is. So, yeah, those are excellent points. Let's jump to cultural Marxism, and we're getting deep in the book now. And this is a subject that I believe needs to be talked about more within the church. I took the fellowship that I have the privilege and blessing of pastoring through a study on cultural Marxism and how it came about and how it's manifested today. And people were very appreciative of learning this information. But cultural Marxism has been and remains one of the primary tools to destroy Western culture. It is specifically designed to attack, denigrate, destroy Western culture. So I'm wondering, Greg, if you would if you'd tell our listeners what it is, first of all, where did it originate, and some examples of how it's manifested today in American culture.
Sure. Well, basically, it's Marxism. You know, Marxism initially was an idea. It was an economic, you know, warfare between, you know, the haves and the have-nots, between the rich and the poor, the workers and the factory owners, if you want to put it that way. But, you know, history showed that it wasn't going to work. World War One, you had all these proletariats that should have been taking part in a worldwide communist revolution that were instead going to fight for their country, even though they were kind of supporting what the Marxists felt like, you know, those who were oppressing them. So it really failed. There was never an international revolution like they were hoping for. And so basically these cultural Marxists replaced the economic warfare that was going on with cultural things. And so the idea was to use various, you know, pit have an oppressor and a victim in various cultural situations, and that would be things like whites versus black, women versus men, homosexual versus straight, whatever you want to talk about, and try to work through that, you know, through that means. And it originated, there was a group of Marxists in Europe that decided to get together and try to, you know, have a Marxist revolution through culture. They formed a school known as the Institute for Social Research in Frankfurt, Germany in the 1930s, to just kind of, as a think tank, you know, there were people like Georg Lukács, who was Hungarian socialist or communist, Antonio Gramsci from Italy, and Herbert Marcuse, just to name a few of them that were basically, you know, theorizing on how to do this. And but what happened was when Hitler came to power, you know, they fled the country because, you know, they were on opposite ends of the political, you know, strata. And they came to the United States, and Columbia University welcomed them in and started promoting their stuff. And then, of course, eventually some of them went to Hollywood and began to indoctrinate the film industry, which you can see why they would do that. And you can see the fallout of that even today, I think.
Yes.
And then, of course, after the war was over, some of them went back to Europe, and like Marcuse stayed here and continued to teach in American universities. But basically it's, you know, what they're trying to do is change civil society. And in particular, they're attacking, Christianity. They want to change the culture, using this oppressor victim, setting. But like Christianity is a key opponent to them. And that's why they're attacking Western culture, because I think Christianity is what they want to attack. And Gramsci even mentioned, he said, you know, that they needed to have what he called the long march through the institutions to turn society against Christianity. That was what he said.
Yes.
And so his idea was to start infiltrating schools, universities, whatever institution he could infiltrate, and slowly change thinking in order to destroy Western culture and Christianity. And they've done just that.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly right. One of the components of cultural Marxism is called critical theory.
Mm-hmm.
Now it has different tentacles, but they all go back to the same poisonous root. Critical theory, be it race theory or feminist theory or critical black theory or what have you, is responsible for much of the discontent, much of the campus problems that we see today. And I'm going to mention Black Lives Matter as one specific example of a group of students who have drunk the Kool-Aid of critical race theory. That's all part of cultural Marxism, meant to destroy and pull down Western culture. You mentioned that one of the key components of of cultural Marxism and critical theory as well is creating victims and perpetrators really out of thin air. There doesn't need to be any evidence. It just is, and we're supposed to accept the fact that these conditions exist. And if we can't see them, it just means that we've been blinded by our privilege. How do you even fight that kind of thing?
Well, I think it's impossible to fight because, you know, critical theory is simply the theory of criticizing everything.
Yes.
And it really, you know, it's, and this comes from them, you know, their own words basically, is that it always identifies what's wrong in society and criticizes, but it itself refuses to be, you know, defined, and therefore you can't criticize it. So like a cultural Marxist will tell everybody what's wrong, and that's okay, but if anybody starts criticizing them, that's not okay.
Yeah.
Now the problem is it's hard to criticize them because you don't even know what you can't define it, you know. But it's like a parasite, you know, it's feeding off its victim, you know.
Yeah.
And what, like you just said, it's creating victims, and it's actually using those people against themselves ultimately, but to promote something, and they become really just kind of cannon fodder in, you know, what they're attempting to achieve on a worldwide scale.
Yes, yes. And that's one of the sad things about Black Lives Matter and some other organizations that have fallen prey to the globalists is that they don't see that they're being used, and once that they're no longer useful, they're going to be kicked to the curb because they're really just a cog in the wheel to get to where the globalists are trying to take us.
Right.
Now, one of the things, finally, we save this one for last, is the rationale for the creation of a type of global religion is also part of the hoped for utopia. Now, Pope Francis, not so very long ago, was asked officially. I read the article myself, and I remember thinking, you have got to be kidding me. They're just right out in the open with their agenda. But the United Nations officially asked Pope Francis to be a leading part, an integral part of this effort of creating a global religion. In addition to this, we also see many, many conferences that are being held all over the world that are advocating for a world religion. So the globalists are behind this too, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, they realize that no matter what they do economically or politically, if they don't get a handle on the religious, the spiritual issues that are facing the world, the divisiveness of the religions of the world, that they're still not going to have peace. You know, if you look historically, you know, some of the worst bloodshed has been over religious conflict, whether you're talking Muslims and Jews, whether you're talking Hindus and Muslims in the Indian subcontinent, whatever you want to talk, Catholics and Protestants in Northern Ireland. And so they realize this, it's a hot topic. And I think, you know, that, they realize that, okay, we can control people externally through all these laws and through the secret police or whatever you have, but internally, it's hard to control people's thoughts. Yeah. And so, and especially religious thoughts, you know, they say, you know, you shouldn't talk about politics and religion because they're such hot topics, but that's really it. And so I think the spiritual issue, though, is the big issue that's going to have to be dealt with. And the reason why I believe it is not only because the facts kind of point that way, but you look in the book of Revelation, the apostle, John tells us, you know, there's going to be a false prophet, the head of this one world religion that's going to be working hand in hand with the Antichrist. Well, you know, he never mentions like the Antichrist economic advisor or anything else, but he does the spiritual because it's a big issue. And obviously because the enemy, Satan, knows that the eternal destinies of men and women are at stake here. And so I think that's the key issue here that it has to be gotten under control, because that's what the devil really is after, is destroying people spiritually.
Yes, amen. That's exactly right. Well, that's a good segue into this. Many of our listeners may at this point be thinking, well, if it's this bad, in every area, well, what in the world can we do about it? So, Greg, what can Christians do right now where they're at to make other people aware and to make a difference?
Yeah. Well, I think one thing is just, you know, try to educate yourself on these things that we're talking about, you know, become knowledgeable of the Bible and understand for that truth, dig in your heels and don't walk the way of the world. I think that they hopefully will promote, you know, what you are standing for in your radio broadcasts and what I'm doing and other like-minded men and women to get the message out to as many people as possible.
Yes.
But I think they need to take an active stand wherever they're at. You know, I see a lot of Christians that are just, the solutions they want to this, to these things that we're talking about are solutions that don't require them to have to change their lifestyle or to, you know.
Yes, right.
And so when I offer solutions, they say, well, that's not really a solution. Well, it is. It's just maybe kind of hard, you know.
Right.
But they don't want that. But we need to be encouraged, you know, that resistance isn't futile. You know, I remember the Star Trek The Next Generation, the Borg, you know, they were saying, you know, everybody must assimilate. Resistance is futile. Well, I don't think it is, you know, but I think we do need to resist. If it's only going to be futile if we don't resist.
Yes.
But, you know, have conversations in their churches and their small groups and with their neighbors on these things, you know. Invite you, Mike, or me to come and speak to their church, you know.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm more than happy to do that, you know. But anyway, I think those are just a few things.
Yes. Friends, the book is A Global Utopia, 12 Features of the New World Order. It's available on Amazon, or you can go to Greg's website, bealertministry.com. That's bealertministry.com. You can pick up this book and, of course, his first book, Mystic Seduction, Awakening Christians to a Real and Present Danger. Now, you've also published a study guide for the book, and you've got a companion DVD for the Mystic Seduction, don't you?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that's something that folks could use, Wednesday night studies or small group studies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of those resources, again, they're available on Greg's website, bealertministry.com. Greg, any other projects you're working on you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, just briefly. Yeah, you know, what I've decided to do, like I said, at the start of the program, the work that's the unfinished part, I think I'm going to release it in a series of probably three smaller books just so people can kind of get through it and digest it easier. Mm-hmm. And I think the next one will probably be out probably in another month or so, and it's going to really be talking about, you know, the impact of literary deconstruction, about, you know, just I'm going to be talking a lot about the late Phyllis Tickle's book, The Great Emergence, and just, you know, her view of how Christianity is modifying. And then the second one that'll follow that will probably be about the emergent church, Rob Bell, some of those, which I know you've done a lot of work on those guys.
Yes.
And then the last one will probably focus more on how some of the mystical changes that are going on in Judaism and Islam that really are going to modify those religions, just like Christianity is being modified and will ultimately, you know, make it possible for the image of the beast to be set up in the temple and worshiped as God. That's kind of what I'm thinking right now. So those probably will come out over the next 6 or 8 months, I would guess, you know, at a pretty even, you know, keel there.
Sounds like another interview then in another 6 or 8 months.
That'd be great. I'd love talking to you, Mike.
Now, if folks want to have you come and speak to their at their church or to their Bible study group or what, can they contact you through your website? Do you have an email there?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be the best way to go to my website under the contact information, fill out a little message there and everything, and then that'll come to me through my email, and I'll get right back to you.
Okay, and just so folks know, most of my listeners know I'm in Ohio, West Central Ohio, and Greg is in Indiana. So if you're in this area, he's close to you, and I know he'd be blessed to come and share with your group. In fact, that's how I met Greg. Went to a conference that he was speaking at and was talking about his book Mystic Seduction, and knew right away I needed to have Greg on the show. So, Greg, it's always a blessing to talk to you. I appreciate your work and research and writing and alerting the church to these things. And we'll we'll chat again soon and have you back on when you get ready to release your next book.
Thank you, Mike, and I appreciate your work too. Keep it up.
No, amen. God bless you, my friend.
You too.
Okay. Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you see.